If you ache for truth, goodness, and beauty, if you're hungry for a Christianity with substance and strength, if you long for a faith that's big and bold and biblical and all about Jesus Christ, if you're inspired by the idea of one church that has spanned 20 centuries, 24 time zones, and two hemispheres, enfolding every race, nation, and language, then you're considering Catholicism. Welcome back to Considering Catholicism. I'm Greg, I'm your host, and I'm here once again with Ed the Protestant.
Who's wearing a great shirt, by the way.
Yes, a lumberjack kind of flannel shirt. And I've got this really nice little kind of dark green, sort of grayish dark green tone quarter neck sweater that my wife picked out for me. And I plucked it in the dark from the closet this morning. Yeah. But we're sitting here again in one of the rooms at the parish, and the two-cycle motor, which was a leaf blower or a trimmer or something, has stopped. So we have that going for us. And the police siren that we heard outside has gone. So hopefully we'll have a clear window to record. But in the last episode, the last conversation we just had, I kind of opened the window to my brain a little bit and was sharing one of my consistent anxiety dreams that I'm back in college and it's like graduation time and I go to the registrar's office and it turns out that like I skipped this one class and I didn't turn in this one paper and I took the wrong classes and now I can't graduate.
Right.
And I get all super anxious, like, oh, wait a minute, I screwed up and I didn't do this and I didn't do this and I did this. So that's a window. And I mean, I'm sure everyone starts shrinking my head. But then we started talking as soon as the recorder ended about our anxiety dreams. So we're going to share way too much about how Ed and Greg's brains work. But I was sharing with him that another one that I haven't had this one since I was like in high school or college, but I remember being in high school and maybe like the first year or two of college. And I had this recurring dream that I was part of a huge international rock band. Like we were really huge, like superstar rock band. And I was the guitar player. I think it was the bass player. And so we were going to fly to like LA or New York or Tokyo or London or something for this giant, you know, stadium concert. And in the dream, I remember we're on the chartered jet and we land and the paparazzi and the motorcade. And then we go to the hotel and all this stuff. And we go over to the stadium and we're backstage and people are asking for autographs and signing pictures and all this stuff. And it's time for the show to start. And we go out on stage with the lights and this and that. There's a whole stadium full of people and they're all shouting and chanting. And it's time to start. And the drummer goes, 1, 2, 3. And he points at me. And I realize I don't know how to play the guitar. I literally don't know how to play the guitar. I don't know, or the bass whatever. I literally have no idea. Like, I don't know why I'm here. And I just stand there and they're all looking at me and everyone's shouting. And I go, I literally don't know how to play it. Why am I here? Right. And so anyway, people are out there like, oh my gosh, they're like figuring out. And so this imposter syndrome, like I sit here and I go, like I'm doing this Considering Catholicism podcast. And I'm like, I literally don't know what I'm doing. I'm just kind of making it up as I go along.
Right.
But then you were sharing, but you are a musician. You do know how to play the guitar, and yet you still have anxiety dreams.
Yeah, I had real quick. This is probably 25 years ago, but it was so vivid that it's like that I remember it well. I was standing backstage at a big auditorium, and I could hear a big crowd. So like maybe 2,500 people, 3,000 people, and I thought, wow, this is a big gig tonight. And I thought it was church related because at the time I had the dream. That's the only place I had ever played in front of big crowds was church stuff. And I had played in front of some pretty big crowds. And we actually went on just before Keith Green one time at a big festival. Anyway, so I'm standing backstage and I can hear the crowd and I'm thinking, what am I here for though? What are we doing tonight? Like, I mean, I should have prepared. I should have known. Why am I not ready for this? I can't even think of who I'm with tonight. Is it just the guys from the church band? What am I doing? Well, anyway, I'm sure the music will be up on the rack in front of my keyboards, and I'm sure I'll be fine. I'm sure once I get out there, I can fake it until I sort of bring back what it is I'm supposed to be doing. And then I hear there's a guy rubbing my shoulders and telling me how good I'm going to be, one of the handlers. And then the announcer says, ladies and gentlemen, what you've all been waiting for, ladies and gentlemen, Ed. And I the curtain parts and I walk outside and I'm thinking, Ed? He knows. Ed, and I walk and out. Who? Yeah. And I walk out and there's just a grand piano and a microphone in the middle of the stage. And I thought, no, I don't have an act. I don't have an act at all. I mean, so now everyone's cheering for me and I'm thinking, I sit down on the bench and I say, hey, how's everybody doing? And big cheers. Like that was the most entertaining thing. Clearly they have a history with me and they're expecting something, but I have no idea what it is. And I'm thinking, all right, I've clearly faked this too long in my life. And now I'm thinking, well, okay, so I'm going to have to, I can play the Linus and Lucy song from Peanuts. Everyone loves that. And I can tell the joke about the guys hiking in the woods when they run across the bear. But at some point, oh, I know. It comes to me. My way out of this is to fake a heart attack. That's what I'm going to do. So in order to really sell it, I'm going to have to pitch forward and split my lip open on the key bed, on the edge of the piano. That will really sell it. There's a good sharp edge going along there. And when I woke up, I had been just trying to work up the courage to actually fall forward and split my lip open because nobody does that on purpose. So, yeah.
Wow. We're going to lose listeners over this because right. A, these stories have been really long and boring and they're like, when are they going to get to the Catholicism part? And B, they're going to figure out that we're like super neurotic and we have imposter syndrome. And like, why are we here talking about Catholicism and stuff? We don't really know what we're doing. And
I actually think I could tie it into today's topic if you want me.
Okay. Well, let's get to today's topic because there are listeners who are listening going, when are we going to get around to actually the Catholicism part? So what's today's topic, Ed?
So anyway, today's topic is churches having or needing, feeling the need to have a vision, something that people can latch onto and hold onto. And that often I have certainly been a part of this. I spent a long time in the big church trying to cook up something cool. And there's all this pressure to be innovative and to be new and different and all these things. And it's like a syndrome.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, the vision thing. I know a priest, a parish priest, who got assigned to a new parish, right? Because about every 5-6 years, typically, the priest will get reassigned by the bishop. So he gets to this new parish, and he's got a couple of people who come and say, Father, what's your vision for ministry? And they've got this expectation, because I think a couple of these people had been influenced by the evangelical world, that he's going to come in and cast some exciting new vision for ministry. And I know this guy, and he kind of looks at him, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. What exactly mean? What did you have a vision for ministry? Right. And they got really frustrated and eventually left the parish because they wanted him to cast a vision. And if you have come out of the evangelical world, the pastor is expected to have a vision for ministry. Yeah. And they have all these takes on that. Like there's this one misuse of this verse about without a vision, the people perish. Right. And which, by the way, exegetically is not what that verse is about at all. What the verse is about with the word vision there should actually be translated revelation without the word of God.
Sure.
Basically what it's saying is without the word of God, the people will perish. But with the way that's been used is that each pastor is supposed to come in and have this unique twist on what the ministry of the church is.
Yeah.
So he's got a new twist on how we should worship, a new twist on how we should read the Bible, a new twist on how we should live our Christian lives, a new twist on what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And there's this expectation built up in the contemporary American evangelical world that the test of your pastor is how visionary he is. And how you measure or choose pastors or choose churches is you go to one where the pastor has some exciting, new, unique, innovative approach to Christianity.
Yeah.
This is worship. This is how you read the Word of God. This is how you be a follower of Jesus. This is how you follow God. This is what spiritual... Oh, Pastor Dave or Pastor Josh or Pastor whatever, he has this real unique vision for Christianity, right?
Yep, yep.
So this priest that I know is standing there sort of like kind of dumbfounded at the question. Like, what do you mean vision? Because this priest, who I think is a faithful priest, says, well, my vision is just to be a Catholic parish. My vision is to provide the sacraments to people, to faithfully preach the word, to faithfully care for the people, to shepherd the flock, to faithfully provide the sacramental ministry of the church. And they're like, well, yeah, but like, yeah, right, oh, I get that. But like, what's your vision for how to do that? And you, I don't. So you and I were talking about this the other day, and I was saying, one of the things that I find incredibly comforting about the Catholic Church is exactly that, that the parish ministry in the Catholic Church is, in a sense, and I'm going to get creamed for using this word. This is my imposter syndrome dreams.
Right.
And someone's going to figure out I don't really know anything about Catholicism and I'm just faking it. But I think I'm going to use the word franchise in a qualified way, right? Like, let's suppose that you buy a franchise, a Starbucks,
McDonald's,
or a Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, good one.
And you go, okay, it has a way that you do things. Like, I'm going to camp on Chick-fil-A because the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A is the only thing in America that works anymore.
They
right?
got it figured
like
out.
Everything in America is broken and wrong and failing, except the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A is the most, like, we put a man on the moon and then everything has been kind of crappy since then, except till the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A came along.
Right.
Right. And the thing is that if you buy a Chick-fil-A franchise, you don't say, well, now I have my unique take, my unique twist, my personal vision for how to be a Chick-fil-A. Because you buy the Chick-fil-A and they give you, I don't know how they do it, but I assume there's like all these training manuals and blueprints and whatever. And here's how you execute doing that. And the cool thing is that wherever you go and you go, oh man, I want to drive through and get a chicken sandwich. Look, there's a Chick-fil-A I can see on my app or whatever, five miles away, wherever I am in the country, I can go there. And I know that drive through will run exactly and effectively because I can count on it. That's what they're going to do. I'm probably just stretching this analogy way too far. But in the same way, one of the things that I find comforting is that wherever I go, I want to say, just don't want to say in the country, wherever I go in the world, because I've been to Catholic churches all around the world, whenever I walk into one, in a sense, it's the same. I mean, in a sense, it's different because it's a different building, it's a different community, and maybe they have a different language or whatever. But the ministry of that church, just like the Chick-fil-A franchise thing, it is the same, which is that they are going to provide the sacraments. There's going to be baptism and there's going to be the Eucharist and there's going to be confessions twice a week and there's going to be, And the pastor of that parish, the parish priest, is going to provide the sacramental and pastoral ministry. And it's almost like, I don't know, again, franchise or template.
Yep.
Right? Yep. And what I don't have to worry about is that when I walk into one, that there's going to be some priest who has his own unique twist on the sacraments.
Yeah. That sounds horrible.
And after Vatican II, there's been some chaos where you had these kind of renegade priests who come in and have their own unique twist on the sacraments. Actually, Pope Francis, just a couple of weeks ago, issued some new document that basically said, knock all that stuff off. There's a way to do the sacraments.
Right.
And every parish priest on the planet Earth is supposed to execute the sacraments exactly the same way.
Good for him.
I mean, just like, again, the McDonald's or the Chick-fil-A or whatever you want.
Right.
They're going to execute that the same way. And so it doesn't matter where I'm in Italy or Japan or South America or Sioux Falls, South Dakota. When I walk into that Catholic church, the confession is going to be the same. The Eucharist is going to be the same. The Mass is going to be the same. The baptism is going to be executed the same way. It's exactly the same. And also, Catholic teaching is consistent across those. So I don't have to worry about some Catholic priest who has his own unique idea about what it means to be a follower of Jesus or his own unique take on what Scripture is, because we have the Catechism of the Catholic Church.
Right.
So I'm sort of freed of that, like, randomness or expectation. And the thing is an evangelical, I go, oh man, I want to go to where I find some pastor who has a take or a twist or a version of Christianity that appeals to me. Right. And then there's the pressure on those guys, because I was one of them, you were part of that world, that you do feel pressure, I did, to come up with something cool and new. And people are going to get bored if I don't have some new, cool vision
right.
for the church.
That's or more
vision
like,
for ministry.
That's more like the entertainment industry. You have to be innovative and new all the time, because nobody's going to buy a record where you sound like somebody because they already have that record.
Right.
You have to do something different.
And so Catholic parishes across the planet are going to be consistent. The version of Christianity, the teaching, like even the fact that the mass readings, because we use a lectionary.
Yeah.
The mass readings are exactly the same mass readings on any given day or any given Sunday across the planet. The feast days and the liturgical calendar, right. is it going to be exactly the same on any given day across the planet? When I right. walk in, it's the feast day of this or this day on the liturgical calendar. These are the mass readings. The mass, the liturgy of the word and the liturgy of the Eucharist are going to be exactly the same. If I walk into a confessional anywhere on the planet, which I have, I'm going to go in and the act of contrition and the words I say are going to be exactly the same. The things that I'm supposed to confess right. for are exactly the same. And I'm not going to hear teaching that deviates from
right.
the teaching of the church. So that actually provides me an enormous amount of comfort.
Yeah.
And I think for the priest, the parish priest, and that's where this priest that I know is kind of dumbfounded that people are expecting him to come up with some new
right.
like vision for ministry.
Right.
And he doesn't have a vision for ministry. I'm here to faithfully execute the parish ministry of the Catholic Church. That's my vision.
Right. That's what I, a couple of years ago when I started talking to you about Catholicism, that's what I was running from. I was so tired of it. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I had been part of it. I mean, that's my performer's dream. That's what happens. And that was, you know, do you remember, I'm sure you do, Chesterton had this analogy of children on top of a mountain. Do you remember that? And if there's cliffs on all sides, you will find these kids all in the center because they're afraid they're going to fall off. They don't know what else to do. And it's just safe to stay right in the middle. But if you build a fence, a strong fence around the outside, they can run and play because they know they're fine as long as they don't go this far. I love that feeling. I feel like in most of the churches I've been in, the evangelical ones anyway, and the charismatic ones, there were no boundaries and it was up to me.
And again, to flip that back to the side of the pastor, we opened with our anxiety dreams right. or whatever. I remember getting out of seminary and I did kind of a post-grad residency year at this one big church. And then I was sent off to this church plant. Yep. And then I went to this other bigger church. And eventually I got called to be the senior pastor of this fairly large church. And I remember the anxiety, talk about our anxiety dreams. Yeah. Because they brought me in and they go, here you go. And I mean, I'm like, I don't know, 32, 33 years right. old at this point. I got a couple little kids at home and they're like, well, what's your vision for ministry? And back to our, dreams of, I don't know how to play the guitar or I didn't, whatever. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what my, but they're like all looking at me, just like all the people right. in the stadium, like, and now play the guitar or perform right. your concert right. or whatever. And you go, I don't know how, I don't know what you want to do. So I started making stuff up because there really was pressure to come up with something exciting and cool and dynamic that'll draw people here.
Right.
And I've noticed with our priests that one of the things that I kind of admire about their seminary experience and formation there, I think, is than ours was, or they are in the evangelical world, is that they're taught to be faithful shepherds, to be faithful priests,
right,
and in a sense to implement and execute the faithful parish ministry of the Catholic Church. And they're freed from those kinds of pressures to innovate and create and
right.
come up with new twisty versions on the faith.
Right.
And then again, on the other side, for the people, we don't have to be subject to Father Bob's wacky new vision of the church.
Right.
Now, some of that has happened, right? There have been renegade priests and stuff like that. But really, in the last number of years, I think the church is more and more cracking down on that. And if that's the right word, and bishops, and saying, no, look, there's the right way to do this.
Right.
Now, I think one thing, though, that I want to make sure that we make clear is that one could say, so you're saying the Catholic Church doesn't have any, isn't there any visionaries or no visionaries? And oh, goodness gracious, no. The history of the Catholic Church is full of visionaries in ministry. But this is a point that evangelicals don't understand. The Catholic Church sort of has, again, my imposter syndrome. Greg, I don't really know anything about Catholicism because I make all this stuff too simple. But like, if you think about the Catholic Church, there's sort of two halves to the organizational chart. Like if you had a giant wall-sized organizational chart of the Catholic Church, there would be two sides. The one side is the parish ministry of the church down through dioceses. Okay? Yep. So you got like, okay, I'm simplifying this, right? But like the Pope at the top and whatever. And then you have all these bishops around the world.
Right.
And then the bishops under them have parishes.
Yeah.
So this giant organizational feeder chart.
Right.
Okay? And that side, the diocesan, episcopal, parish ministry of the church is largely exactly what we said, consistent.
Right.
Okay? There is a way to do it. It's a sacramental way to do it. Then there's this other sort of half of the organizational chart that comes off the Pope, and these are the religious orders.
Mm-hmm.
So the Benedictines, the Franciscans, the Dominicans, the Jesuits, the whatever.
Yep.
And throughout the last 2,000 years, the innovation, experimentation, visions is on that side of the church.
Yeah, I can see that.
So Corey and I had an episode not too long ago where we were talking about the military orders of the church, the fighting monks and the warrior monks.
Yeah, those were good.
So we talked about how you had Saint Benedict who came along and had this new vision for how to live the faith. And so we formed the Benedictine religious order.
Right.
And the monasteries. And there was a whole vision for how to live in the monasteries. Mm-hmm. And those developed. And then there were sort of splits because there were new innovations and visionaries of people who branched off and founded new sort of suborders. And you have the Cistercians and the whatever.
Right.
And all these. But then you also had other innovators who came along and visionaries like St. Francis of Assisi, who says, well, I want to found a religious order, but it's not going to be lived in monasteries. It's going to be out amongst the people. And we're going to be called friars, order of Friars Minor. And we're going to be the Franciscans. And he has this whole vision. And then that whole becomes a whole branch of sort of a vision of how to live the Christian faith. And then along comes St. Dominic. And he forms the Order of Preachers, the Dominicans. And they have this completely different sort of vision for how to live the Christian life.
Yeah.
And that's the Dominican orders and everything that all the works and things that spring off of them. Then you have what Corey and I talked about in the Crusades, these really unique sort of military religious orders, the Knights Templar and the Hospitallers, the Knights of Malta and whatnot. And they split off and formed this exciting, sort of interesting new visions. And then you can look at individuals. You can see Mother Cabrini, who comes to America and founds 200 orphanages and schools and hospitals. And that's a whole vision. So one of the things that I think is super cool about Catholic history is that it balances the consistent execution for people of the life lived in the church, the sacramental life lived in your parish, which is weirdly consistent over the last couple thousand years.
Yeah.
Sure, the Mass has changed a couple of times, the Latin Mass to the secular Mass, to the current Mass, tweaks and changes and this and that. But by and large, the sacramental ministry of the Catholic Church is consistent over ages and millennia.
Right.
And again, across the planet in any parish church. And yet there's this sort of other half of the church, the religious orders and all of that.
Yeah.
Where there's all of these visionaries and innovation and everything else. And that's one of the things that excited me so much to convert and excites me to this day about Catholicism is it, I think it gets that balance right between the sort of consistent, wholesome, you know, franchising
right.
of the Catholic faith throughout the in every parish across the planet. And then on the other side, this vast world of thousands of saints and founders of religious orders and all the great variety yeah. and innovation and vision there. And that's when you look at the totality of the Catholic Church. Like I said, I think you get that balance right. And I don't think that you have that in Protestantism in general, because it's driven by always wanting to innovate. And when you get into the contemporary evangelical world, it's driven to this extreme where each pastor is supposed to have some unique vision for ministry or vision for the faith.
Well, then the pressure on the average attendee at an evangelical church is to be very careful to find the church that has got the best innovation. And so that prompts a bunch of church hopping and a bunch of shifting. And
well, and Ed, you've made this point many times on the podcast that it also puts you in a position of having to judge the pastor.
Yes.
So you come into the exciting new church where the exciting new pastor, Bob, has got an exciting new twist on ministry.
Right.
This is my new twist on how to read the Bible. This is my new twist on worship. This is my new twist on discipleship, on the Christian life. My new twist on how to pray or whatever it is.
Right.
And so then you sit there and go, okay, Pastor Bob's got this vision for the Christian life, vision for the church.
Right.
And I'm sitting here going, well, is Pastor Bob right or not?
Right.
And so then I have to sit there and look at the scriptures and listen to him and evaluate, is Pastor Bob legit or is he off beam? Is he winging it? Is he like Greg and his and Ed and their anxiety dreams? Is he is he faking it? Is he making it up? Does he not really know how to play the guitar?
Right.
And or is he like Ed? I don't really actually have anything to bring, but I'm just making this stuff up. And it puts the average Christian in this really awkward position where they are responsible for sort of judging the doctrine and the theology of the church and are supposed to, without necessarily specific education or background and no fixed markers or guidelines, they're like, well, I think Pastor Bob is right, or I think he's wrong, or I don't know, maybe I'll just go find somebody else until I find a pastor that sort of works for me.
Well,
and again, the average person, and this is where you can't trust the church. And that's the one thing that I think that the church is supposed to be a place where it is Christ's body. It is apostolic, right? One holy Catholic and apostolic church handed down where I go, I can trust the teaching of the church, I can trust the ministry of the church, I can trust the sacraments of the church to be legitimate and to have that apostolic provenance that gives me comfort and doesn't put me in the position of being the judge over the pastor.
Well, then it's just me and him. It's just me and him. Literally, in the whole world, I have to decide, because there's nobody else calling him on it, because he started his own church, or they brought him in to do this, and now I'm right back to having to decide.
Yeah. So the vision thing. So to kind of bring this to close, one the only thing I think I would amend or add to my comments would be that you may have an individual parish priest who maybe is going to lead his church through a building program and build a new physical building, and he's got a vision for building that building, adding a school or something, or maybe a vision for how they can do community engagement or something, or start some social justice ministries or community ministries or whatever. But yeah, the vision thing, I think that's it. The Catholic Church is full of visionaries in one way, but the parish ministry is not a vision-driven deal. And I think that the expectations of contemporary evangelicalism being laid on our priests is really ridiculous and not healthy for the priests and not healthy for the people. And
I'd be disappointed if and when I convert that I come to a church and they're taking a vote about whether or not we should have drums on the stage or something.
All right. Hey, thanks for listening. And if you don't think that Ed and I, maybe you do think Ed and I are imposters, you don't really know what we're doing, but we secretly lay awake at night dreaming that we are and anxious that we are. But if you're supportive of what we do here and it's of value to you, would you please rate the podcast on Spotify or Apple or Amazon or wherever you're getting it? And would you write a review, particularly on Apple or on our own website? That really would help us out. And if this is valuable to you, it's helping you to consider Catholicism or grow deeper in it, and you would like to help other people, more people to consider Catholicism, would you consider giving a one-time or recurring donation so that we can keep this ministry going? And finally, if you have a question or a topic or a comment or a story to share, write me at consideringcatholicism@gmail.com. And Ed and I will be back soon with another episode.
That's right.
But right now, we're going to go home and have troubled dreams.
Here I go.
Yeah, that's right. The dream where we show up without pants or something.
Right.
I never really dream that one. That's not my thing.
Oh, yeah, I got that.
You have the
common
pants thing?
Yeah, it's common.
Yeah, I don't really worry about my pants. I just worry that, I don't know what I'm doing. So, okay. All right. Thanks, Ed. Bye.